The power of friendship is easily underestimated as a constant force in human life. It's said that a diminishing circle of friends is the first terrible diagnostic of a life in deep trouble, perhaps due to too much focus on your professional identity and overwork, or conversely, giving in to appearances and sacrificing real connections to follow the crowd. Our individualistic society makes it easy to forget who will be there when our constructed personalities trip headlong down the inevitable pitfalls and hidden vulnerabilities that surprise us, even in an average existence. After all, humans are social creatures. Despite our heroic tales of incredible individuals who forged an empire, created a scientific leap, or dominated an industry, the truth is that no one really achieved anything important completely alone. To be our best selves, we need to humbly accept our limits and nurture our community and master the skills of friendship in work, family, social relationships, and perhaps most importantly, in romance. And yet, despite the frustrating dichotomy of friendship, is that it only works if we are able to be comfortable alone. Alain de Botton wisely states that the fear of being alone is perhaps responsible for more unhappy relationships, more throttling of psychological development, and more pent-up misery than almost any other. Fear of being alone is, by any reckoning, one of the single greatest contributors to human misery, as it is the driver of some of our weightiest and most unfortunate decisions. And thus, we seem to find that the relationships we need most are the very thing we must be able to do without. So instead of a simple conclusion here pushing us in one direction, we have a requirement for a nuanced understanding of ourselves, which sounds like the perfect opportunity for a deep dive into the nature of our psychology and where a growth mindset can help us. So hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Webster-Harris. On the quest to understand our best selves, we're digging into the details of confident solitude versus crushing loneliness and healthy, long-lasting friendships without neediness or insecurity. Stay tuned. Today's episode will show the flaws in fearing loneliness and how to create confidence in ourselves. We will then move into the recipe for successful long-term friendships and relationships and how to leverage a growth mindset to improve our communication, deepen our understanding, and focus on creating enjoyable experiences across our life. Jumping straight into it, loneliness sucks. It makes us anxious and easily overwhelmed and lost in the sea of our own emotions. One reason that we make oxytocin is to bind us to others. Yet rushing for support from a place of need can be just as bad for us. Alain de Botton is right. It's not hard to understand the fear of being alone, the empty apartment after work, the eeriness of Sunday afternoons, the sense of exclusion during the holidays. We know the agonies of being on our own very well. What is far less understood is the enormously high price exacted on the other side of the equation. Alain argues that there are seven areas where fear of loneliness will cause us pain. Firstly, it just pushes us into poor choices, compelling us to make hasty and ill-considered decisions whilst ignoring red flags, seeking anyone instead of the right one, which inevitably may involve several failed attempts before you get there. The only souls with any realistic chance of ending up with the partner they deserve are those who have properly reconciled themselves to the prospect of never being with anyone at all. Secondly, fear of loneliness makes small problems compound. A not quite right partner doesn't sound that bad. We shouldn't expect perfect anyway. However, like a small pebble in our shoe that is bearable for a few steps, over time it can cause havoc. Tolerating a slightly wrong partner can transform into a source of deep unhappiness, affecting all aspects of our life together. Slightly wrong can end up indistinguishable from entirely horrific. One of the reasons here is the third problem is that we develop weakness in asserting our needs. Fear of loneliness undermines one's ability to assert needs within a relationship, leaving us vulnerable and at the mercy of our partner. This dynamic leads to a power imbalance where the more independent partner can freely dictate the terms of the relationship whilst we just have to submit. This becomes even worse with the fourth point of learned helplessness. prolonged time in unsatisfying relationships can lead to a state of learned helplessness. When we expect that this is all we can get, we stop thinking that there is possibly a better option. We lose our autonomy to improve our situation, which means that it can be even more likely to carry on getting worse. Dealing with problems on our own isn't always fun, but it does leave us with simply no other choice than to just find strength within ourselves and deal with it. And once you find that strength, no one can take it away from you. Point number 5 is the loss of freedom and missed potential connections. If you commit too early to a relationship, that can lead to regrets about missed opportunities to experience the diversity of different human interactions. Likely signing away our freedoms ultimately constrains our social and emotional growth. And then there's the other problem of a fundamental disconnection from ourself. Constant companionship makes it impossible to engage in deep self-reflection and exploration of our own minds. This leads to a diluted sense of identity and unexplored potential. As Elaine says, the incessant presence of others stops us from making friends with our own minds. And finally, but by no means the worst, is acceptance of mediocrity. Complacency arises from the act of settling. We won't be curious or restless. We won't dare, as the single must, to go up to strangers and risk our pride. We will stop learning. We believe that we've answered our needs completely, but only on the basis of suppressing our knowledge of what our needs really are. And the overall conclusion here, I found, is that instead of using companionship to overcome loneliness, we must first overcome loneliness ourselves to solve companionship. As we learned with the Stoics, the obstacle is the way. Being comfortable in our own independence is a life skill that fosters a secure attachment style and opens us up to more fulfilling relationships. And now, before you ditch everyone you've ever known to be more independent, we'll do a hard topic change to the discussion of what a truly healthy friendship and relationship looks like. And from that, we'll move on to how to use a growth mindset to build that relationship independently with yourself first and then with others. David White says that friendship is a mirror to presence and a testament to forgiveness. Friendship not only helps us see ourselves through another's eyes, but can be sustained over the years only with someone who has repeatedly forgiven our trespasses, as we must find it in ourselves to forgive them in turn. A friend knows our difficulties and shadows and remains in sight, a companion to our vulnerabilities more than our triumphs, when we are under the strange illusion we do not need them. An undercurrent of real friendship is a blessing exactly because its elemental form is rediscovered again and again through understanding and mercy. All friendships of any length are based on a continued mutual forgiveness without tolerance and mercy. All friendships die. And so here he's speaking to the courage it takes to invite someone into our lives and to be truly seen by them. It takes confidence to engage in the mutual discovery of each other's worlds with the risk of being judged unworthy, without hiding or sacrificing on who we really are and our own imperfections. This process is not without its challenges. It demands openness, honesty, and the willingness to be radically vulnerable, a leap of faith that is both terrifying and exhilarating. The key to a lasting friendship, romantic or otherwise, is the recognition that both individuals and the relationship itself will evolve over time. And being able to embrace this change rather than resisting it allows couples to grow together, finding new depths of love and companionship at every stage of life. And I'm sure you'll have noticed how you have changed over time, as have your friends. University and jobs drive us to different places and to be different people. My relationships with old friends find new ways to work, whilst those friendships based on something more brittle can break and be left behind. So no matter the medicinal virtues of being a true friend or sustaining a long, close relationship with another, the ultimate touchstone of friendship is not improvement, neither of the other or of the self. The ultimate touchstone is witness. The privilege of having been seen by someone and the equal privilege of being granted the sight of the essence of another. To have walked with them and to have believed in them, and sometimes just to have accompanied them for however brief a span on a journey impossible to accomplish alone. And this is just so true. Friendship is the peaceful non-judgment of providing a comforting, lasting presence. And curiously, that is exactly the opposite of loneliness. It may feel like we've now found that we should fear loneliness after all, but that is not correct. To find or build a friendship that could be this solid, we need to have the emotional distance and security in ourselves to have that strength to be vulnerable, to leave the relationships that do not serve us. And ultimately, people won't feel comfortable being let in through a door that slams shut behind them. To let someone in, you have to be comfortable to let them out again as well. So we will go on to build that strength and build our growth mindset and relationships after the break. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. A common misconception about relationships is that they have to be effortless and natural, but no one is perfect, and that means both our partners and ourselves need work, and that's fine. Sometimes the best relationships happen when both people put in the work to make them great. I used BetterHelp last year when I first started dating my current partner, and it really helped me to understand her and how I could be a better partner myself. It really improved our relationship as well as my relationship with myself. And I would certainly say that therapy isn't just for people who've experienced major trauma, and it can help anybody to be their best selves. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and conveniently flexible to meet your schedule. Just fill in a simple questionnaire and you can be matched with a therapist within a day. So become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for another soulmate as well or not. Visit betterhelp.com/growth mindset today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/growth, G-R-O-W-T-H, growth mindset. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. I work personally with many entrepreneurs who I always recommend to keep LinkedIn front of mind for hiring because it's so consistently useful and reliable. It isn't just a jobs board, but a social network of more than a billion professionals, giving you access to a diversity of professionals that you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all of that whilst making the process easy and intuitive. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. LinkedIn even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker and less political. There's clearly a reason that 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/growth. That's linkedin.com/growth, G-R-O-W-T-H, to post your job for free. And like all good things in life, terms and conditions apply. Okay, so how to use a growth mindset to build our relationship with ourselves and with others. Adopting a growth mindset is a concept developed by Carol Dweck, who posits that abilities and intelligence can be developed through dedication and hard work. It always reminds us to recognize the opportunities for growth within challenges rather than giving up. It's a self-loving form of continuous learning rather than a toxic, endless pursuit of perfection. It's transformative in relationships and, of course, life. We can certainly foster confidence, resilience, and independence by seeking ways to step out of our comfort zone to securely navigate solitude and more wisely navigate companionship. You may have heard of monk mode lately as the trending pursuit of complete isolation from distractions, relationships, just to work on yourself, following perhaps a very hard gym routine and diet and focusing on skill-based improvements. This can be great for a few people and favored mainly by young males, but this isn't that practical for many of us. However, I do think we should all practice a form of a self-development journey and look into things like comfort challenges. On this topic, you might like our recent episode on the four quadrants of mental toughness and the science behind what mental toughness really is. But anyway, some healthy challenges to increase personal independence might be trying activities alone, starting small with things like dining out alone, going to workshops, or working your way up to solo travel. Any adventurer will say that the first step is the hardest, but overcoming your own anxiety and spending a month in countries like Italy whilst making friends and having the freedom to do whatever you want without compromise genuinely creates a love for independence and builds a strength that you probably didn't know you had. It can also be a great way to get over a breakup. If you've ever read Eat, Pray, Love, it's a good example of this. If you're active and fitness minded, I'd really recommend an excessively long hike or cycle ride over a few weeks for some bonus points on this area. But regardless, travel and adventure teaches you to overcome daily obstacles calmly. I vividly remember being arrested for absolutely no reason in Paraguay, and after a few hours of panic and a lot of confusion, we were let out, and it's definitely been harder to faze me since that experience. Now, whether or not you're able to travel or also get arrested, instead of seeing setbacks as failures, we can view them as feedback and an integral part of any learning process. With a growth mindset, we can view loneliness by framing solitude not as a sign of failure, but as a state from which valuable lessons and personal growth can emerge. We can reflect on what we've learned without giving up and building a greater understanding of our needs. In the modern barrage of information on social media, it can feel difficult to not compare ourselves to those around us, but most achievements take a lot of time and sustained effort. In Nepal, working as a mountain guide, I found that basically anyone with a basic level of fitness can climb to Annapurna or Everest base camp. Some need a lot longer to deal with altitude sickness, whilst others can go there very quickly. But there's nothing fundamentally stopping someone who is willing to put one foot in front of the other and just take a rest if the altitude gets to them, and then carry on going when they're ready for it. And like altitude, it's the same with solitude. Sure, you have people who are born for it, like Carl Jung. He said, "Solitude is for me the fount of healing which makes my life worth living." But for other people who perhaps struggle climbing the mountain of solitude, if you can accept gradual progress by building on personal goals and celebrating small victories, you will inevitably get there. A useful point for independence that will neatly transition us into the friendship side of using a growth mindset is seeking feedback and learning from others. This does sound like relying on other people, yet ironically, to become more independent, we can actually use others. It sounds absurd, I know, but stick with me. People who try to succeed at a new project like starting a business are ultimately very independent, crazy people. But seeking advice and support from others is still brilliantly helpful in what is mostly an independent pursuit. Striving for too much isolation is actually quite unhelpful. I think for anyone, if you can learn how to quickly build a network in any area, it makes it so easy for you to transition based on your needs. If you want to start a podcast but you don't know any podcasters, the confidence to reach out, attend some meetups by yourself, can quickly create a new base of support and learning that means you don't need your current network to be able to support you in a new potential area of your life. And this is a huge unlock for people when suddenly anything becomes possible. You don't need the people around you to care about what you want to do or to be able to help you with it, because you can independently find help for yourself wherever you want to go. And now that we've looked at independence through a lens of growth mindset, we can examine how to build a healthy friendship and relationship for the long term. In practical terms, a growth mindset in relationships means celebrating efforts, embracing imperfections, and viewing conflicts as opportunities to strengthen the bond rather than creating cracks. It all sounds so simple, doesn't it? But of course, it isn't. So let's discuss some strategies to improve communication, understanding, and creating bonding experiences. Communication is the biggest source of problems, probably. Despite our giant brains, we are terrible at actually explaining precisely our needs in an honest manner. Ironically, our ego's need to be fundamentally understood by everyone means that we can actually end up blocking that understanding from happening. So the first thing we can do here is actually to focus our own efforts on just listening better. Active listening means fully understanding another person's perspective without immediately jumping to conclusions or becoming defensive. To do this, we should repeat back the things that we've heard our partner say and ask further questions. And I'm sure you'll find that often when you are annoyed, your partner might perceive this as you being annoyed at them when you actually aren't. But if they then take it personally, whilst also failing to understand what you're actually annoyed about, it can then develop into you genuinely being annoyed at them. So it's our assumptions that are the killers of communication. Instead, by repeating each other's statements to each other, it blocks those assumptions from happening, because if we've got it wrong, our partner can tell us what's wrong first before we act on it. And the slower form of communication just really helps to keep the conversation calm and at a sensible pace, which prevents it from spiraling. And so it's honestly such a life hack. And if you want to look more into this, the book on nonviolent communication is brilliant. Another life hack is simply expressing appreciation more often. My partner, I have to say, is really good at this, and I am trying to improve because it's not my life skill. There are so many little moments where we do feel grateful and then don't mention it at all. It just exists in our brain. That means that often our partners hear more of our complaints or our suggestions of ways to improve instead of hearing so many of the things that we love. And this is also important to use with friends. If you ever just think of a friend, send them a message saying something like, "Hey, this happened, it made me think of you. Hope you're doing well." It's such a simple way to just keep in touch and you never regret doing it. Now, onto deepening understanding. We think if we spend lots of time with someone, we should really know them well. Yet sometimes it feels like our partners are the biggest mystery to us compared to people we haven't spent so much time with. Something I've seen with most of my friends with strong relationships is that they have some form of regular shared reflection. This might be a weekly date night or a monthly relationship check-in. I even have a friend who has OKRs with his wife, which sounds a little toxic, I'll grant you that, but putting metrics around a North Star of just having a healthy marriage and breaking that into shared goals like mind, body, and soul means that they have metrics of 32 meaningful conversations a week for their mind and 10 activities a week for their soul. You might not be that into numbers and tracking, but having regular open space for deep discussion does provide the space to relax, an outlet for any of those building tensions where we know we'll be in the right headspace for a harder conversation instead of exploding at inconvenient moments. We also need to use these times to share our insecurities and vulnerabilities. Our worries that we aren't enough, or we might struggle to say what we mean in words, fears of health or finances. Hiding our fears is hiding ourselves, and it weakens us, whereas a relationship needs the deeper emotional intimacy to stay secure. Bottling up our fears also leads to them developing further, and it can lead us to collecting more evidence to convince us our fear is justified, instead of relieving our nerves through assurance. And that's why it was so important to build the confidence and independence we've been speaking about beforehand, to trust in being authentically ourselves, which then allows us to build authentic, trustable relationships. And then now onto perhaps my favorite area, which is shared experiences, because my love language, if you're into these things, is time together. So of course, this is my favorite. Regardless, creating traditions and rituals is an absolute must. Whether it's a simple morning coffee together, a weekly date night, or an annual trip, probably all of them. Shared moments top up our oxytocin and security and provide that shared witness to life that is the bedrock of friendship. There's some fascinating research on taking up hobbies and the importance of doing new things together. Because let's say me as a mountain guide, I took my partner rock climbing. That's cool, but as I'm an expert, it could be less bonding than if we do something completely new for both of us. It's been shown that learning and growing in something new together is even more bonding. That means trying a new type of cooking or class, a new board game, taking up jiu-jitsu, a new language together. It doesn't actually matter as long as you both start from a point of a similar place and have a shared sense of discovery. Regularly finding new things helps spark the feelings of novelty and gives us the nurturing space to discover ourselves and new sides to the relationship. So in summary, we've learned the paradox that instead of overcoming loneliness through companionship, we can solve companionship by first overcoming loneliness. And I will say that honestly, this episode felt to me like it needed to be 5 times longer for me to actually give it justice to explain what was going on here. And I have genuinely struggled to put it together in a way that makes sense. So thanks for sticking with me. And I hope it's given you some important lessons and ideas for a stronger relationship with yourself and with others. Perhaps the imperfect collision of conflicting ideas is a beautiful testament to the parallel of the confusing reality of relationships. And on that, if you enjoyed anything, please hit me up in the comments or share it with a friend or, of course, a partner. As always, life is to be enjoyed, so don't put off relaxing or investing in yourself until some arbitrary goals that keep changing are met. Life is to be enjoyed today. Don't be afraid to trust yourself and make whatever leap you need to make. And remember to be kind to yourself and someone else too.